Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly, the films Thoroughbreds and Game Night, or Thoroughbred Game Night. No, can't do that. Hi, David. How are you?
Okay, Joe. How are you doing this week?
I am all right.
Well, that's good. I am doing all right, too. And I have a couple of you know, not bad movies to talk about this week. I can't call them great or anything like that. But I had a pretty good time watching both of them. So let us start out with Thoroughbreds. Thoroughbreds comes into a kind of a little subgenre of movies, which is the sort of morbid movie about teenagers. By that, it's not like any sort of a serious psychological study or anything like that. It's just a morbid movie. But it's told with a kind of panache, and it's on a very small scale. It's a very sort of precisely focused little sort of dual portrait of these two teenage girls. But I think works quite well, but you have to be ready for a story which is a pretty darn downbeat when you go into this one. So Thoroughbreds begins with a sort of a mysterious image of a teenage girl sort in a dark, apparently a stable. You sort of hear stable noises around, and she is facing a horse, perfectly nice-looking horse in this very dark stable. And then after that goes away, we have our actual story, in which we are introduced to these two teenage girls, Amanda and Lily. Amanda played by Olivia Cooke, and Lily played by Anya Taylor-Joy. And they know each other, and they are now sort of reacquainting themselves. One of them, it turns out, has been paid to be a sort of a tutor to the other one and help her sort of with her schoolwork. And we pretty rapidly discover, and this is none of these are spoilers, this is all the very beginning of the movie, we very early in the movie discover that one of these girls she actually sort of gives a little explanation about her personality. She says she has no empathy. She doesn't understand feelings. She doesn't feel feelings that other people feel. She has learned how to mimic feelings and learned how to make it sort of so that she can look like she is having feelings and reacting to things like a normal average person, but she doesn't feel feelings. So this might tip some of us off that this character is meant to be a sort of a sociopath or even psychopath, somebody with no feelings, although she seems harmless enough. So that's fine. And our other young woman, we discover, has family troubles. And in fact, a good part of the movie takes place in her house. Particularly, she has a mother who is, well, but by the way, if I didn't mention this, these girls are both very privileged. They come from pretty wealthy backgrounds. And so our other young woman has a mother who is just sort of a rich lady who doesn't pay much attention to anything that's going on anywhere outside of her own sort of immediate field of vision. And she has a very nasty, bad guy stepfather, who is played, by the way, by Paul Sparks. Very good performance. And it then evolves that if she could, she would eliminate this stepfather. And our other character, our other main character, who the one with no feelings, with no empathy, suggests the possibility of killing him. That's what she might decide to do. And, of course, this starts off as just talk, and then it evolves pretty soon into sort of a, well, what if we actually did that? How would we go about it kind of a thing? Our other main character, or not main character, but pretty significant character, is a guy named Tim, who is a local drug dealer and who has done jail time for statutory rape and who is another very bad guy. This is a movie in which the main female characters are very iffy, morally speaking, and our main male characters are not morally iffy. They are morally bad. He's a bad guy, and he has certain qualities that might be useful to them, namely a certain sort of ruthlessness and a certain sort of patheticness. And he has a gun, which interests them both very much and which they want to find out about. So this is a character with a very small, excuse me, a movie with a very small number of characters. The only two people who could be called really important important characters are the two girls, Amanda and Lily. And then we have two sort of secondary, still important characters, but definitely secondary. The stepfather, Mark, played by Paul Sparks, and the drug dealer, Tim, played by Anton Yelchin. And then there is the mother, who is played by Kaylee Vernoff. And that's about it. Other than that, the characters are very, very, very minor. And we see how things evolve. Now, I said before, it's a very most kind of a morbid film. It's one of these films that is very, and I say one of these films because we've seen them from time to time. They've come across over the years, which is very deadpan. Nothing is played for drama. Nothing is really played for laughs. Nothing is really played for any powerful emotion because these two girls, each one of them is rather flat in her affect, unless they're doing something like learning how to, or either demonstrating or learning how you can really look like you're crying when you're not crying at all, that kind of thing. The characters are very sort of deadpan, these two main characters. And the movie approaches everything in that way. There is never any underscoring, never any accenting, or I will say very rarely at least. Things move along on a very sort of even keel, and what draws us in and makes us interested in this even keel is that it's an interesting situation, and we really don't know how it's going to play itself out, and that is how suspense is developed. The movie is a nice-looking movie, made clearly on a modest budget, but a lot of it takes place in that very lovely house, and we have a whole lot of sort of nice decors. The horse does reappear later in the movie, more something that we hear about than that we actually see again, but it turns out to, in a very deadpan sort of a way, something that involved the horse, another morbid thing, turns out to be sort of important in the development of the two main characters, the two girls, Amanda and Lily, and that is where the title comes from, Thoroughbreds. It refers to the horse, but it also refers very much to these girls, who again come from this very privileged sort of fancy pants sort of lineage, and there's a lot of money and stuff, especially the one whose house we spend a lot of time in. So they are kind of thoroughbreds, and the private schools and all this kind of stuff enters into the film. But it also has to do, it is something I'm reading into it, but I think it's a legitimate interpretation. It has to do with the idea of sort of not literal inbreeding, but the way we know that thoroughbreds, and particularly purebreds with dogs, once these lines get refined to the point where you can really rely on certain kinds of characteristics coming out, things sort of can sort of start to go wrong. And you can start to have kind of anomalies and things that you didn't really want to develop that can become problems. So I think that's also a kind of a subtext that's running through the film, the idea of the overprivileged person, of the overbred person, and all of this. So again, I want to repeat one more time. The movie is very, very deadpan. It's downbeat and deadpan, the two Ds. And you have to kind of get yourself involved in it. But I had no trouble doing that. It reminded me of a movie of many years ago called River's Edge, directed by Tim Hunter, a very gifted director who has not done enough work in feature films. I wish he had done more over the years. But Tim's movie River's Edge is the same kind of a thing, where some high school students discover a body by a river's edge and things go on from there, and it's just very morbid. Not as deadpan, however, as Thoroughbreds. Thoroughbreds kind of reminds me of what I think is now a moribund subgenre, the mumblecore movie, where people don't emote in very powerful ways. Now, I qualify all that by saying that the main male characters, the stepfather and the drug dealer, do get to do some emoting here and there along the way, and that sets them into very stark contrast with the girls. One final note on Thoroughbreds is that the drug dealer is played by Anton Yelchin, a very, very talented actor. He was been in a number of films, including a very tiny little movie that I rather liked last year called Porto, and he died at the age of 27 in a freak accident. It's as I've said before, I think about him, a real loss. He was not one of the great actors of our time or anything, but he was a very, very talented up-and-coming young actor. I haven't checked on it, but Thoroughbreds must have been one of the very last movies that he did before he died. It's worth seeing, among other things, as a tribute to him. He gives another very, very good performance in this film, and it's nice to see the little bits of work that he managed to do before his very untimely death. So now on to Game Night. Now, Game Night is not deadpan at all. Game Night is what I would call a morbid comedy, or a dark comedy, extremely dark comedy. And so here we have our main characters are a couple named Max and Annie, played by Jason Bateman, who, by the way, is always a pleasure to watch, and Rachel McAdams, who ain't bad to watch either. And they have this little custom or habit or tradition of having a game night at their house on a regular basis. And their friends come over and they all play this game, or they play that game, or they play one game, and then they switch to another game. It's game night, and it's something that young married and together people like to do. So they have game night. There is also a next door neighbor played by the talented Jesse Plemons, who is always fun to watch. His name is Gary. He is a policeman whose wife left him recently, and all he does is mope about his wife, who he loves so much, and she is just so he's an next door neighbor, and he is not a very pleasant guy. Not that he's a bad person, he's a police officer, he's a good police officer, but he always wants to join them for game night. But who needs this cop who lives next door, who does nothing but mope all the time at game night? So they're always pretending it's not game night, or, oh, these are just a couple of friends who dropped over for dinner, it's not game night, Gary. And so that's another little thread that runs through the movie and turns out to have very major repercussions at the end of the film. So the whole movie starts off when these people get together for game night, and then it turns out that the brother of Max and Annie are our main couple, the brother of Max, who is a very, very rich, successful guy who doesn't live anywhere nearby, whose name is Brooks. It turns out he's in town, and he's going to come over for game night this particular time. So when Brooks shows up, he says that he has spent a lot of money arranging a very special game for everybody to play, whether they want to or not. And it's one of these kind of role-playing things, and there's going to be some incredibly dramatic thing is going to happen in a few minutes. And throughout the rest of the game, no one will know what is real and what isn't real. And it's one of these sort of cops and robbers kinds of things. This reminded me very much of David Fincher's very entertaining movie, The Game, of several years ago, where we have this role-playing game, which involves all kinds of people, and neither the viewer nor the people in the game really have any idea what is real and what isn't until the very end. So that's the idea, Brooks says, with this game. And then sure enough, some thugs suddenly burst into the house, and we, the audience, like the people at game night, are wondering, are these perhaps real thugs, or are these part of the game that Brooks has arranged? And things go on from there. So that is the premise of the movie. And again, it is very, very much a comedy. And I found a lot of the comedy to be pretty, pretty silly and even kind of dumb sometimes. And there's a certain amount of drama involved because, you know, people get hit and people get injured and people get wounded. And again, you're never quite sure what's part of the game and what maybe is not part of the game. The movie is justified, in my opinion, for a couple of scenes, which I found really, really funny. I'll only mention one of them, and this is a time when, yes, Max, our main character, he and Annie are our main characters, has been wounded, and Annie has to try to get a bullet out of his arm, and she's getting instructions off of her cell phone, and the screen keeps going blank. And it's not a scene that lasts very long, it's just a few minutes, but I found it really clever and really funny, and it alone, along with two or three other scenes that are similarly effective, I found making the whole movie really worthwhile, even though, again, there's a lot of dumb stretches in it. The cast is really good. I mentioned Jason Bateman, always a pleasure to watch. Rachel McAdams is just fine. Jesse Plemons, they're all just fine. In very, very small roles, we have some actors who are somehow always interesting. Danny Houston comes in very, very briefly in the movie. And near the end of the film, when a couple of really, really bad guys show up, one of them's played by Michael C. Hall, who I just always love to run across him in anything, because he was in one of my two or three all-time favorite series of many years ago, 6 Feet Under, which, if anybody doesn't know that series, I cannot recommend it too highly. He was one of the real main characters of that. And then in Dexter, which was another very sort of dark comic series in which he played a serial killer who actually operated on the side of good. So always a pleasure to see Michael C. Hall, and even though his role and Danny Houston's role are very, very small in Game Night, it's a pleasure to see them. And then there's just other good people who play significant characters, Sharon Horgan, Billy Magnuson, Kylie Bunbury, Lamorne Mars. So it's a very, very well-acted film. It's a very, very nicely done film. The movie was co-directed. A lot of co-directed movies these days, it seems, by John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein. This is their second movie for either of them, their second feature film, and also their second feature feature film as a team. And I think they really know what they're doing. Game Night struck me as less consistently good than Thoroughbreds. Again, has its ups and downs, and only a handful of scenes are really, really, really good in my opinion. But I always found it fun to watch. When it gets funny and when it gets affected, it's really, really a whole lot of fun. So this is the kind of movie I think we need right around at this time of year when spring is not quite here. Movies that are just engaging without having any great artistic ambitions. You can just sort of sit back, relax your mind, and have a good time watching them. And that is my, I hope, good time story this week, Jill.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett. Films in Focus, the films Thoroughbreds and Game Night.